corporate attorney Rich Honan pays us a visit once a month with some thoughts on headlines from the business world, and he's doing exactly that today. We love when he's here. He's here to help us sort out this trade pact. And who better to do that than Rich Honan? Rich is the partner in charge of the Albany office of Phillips Lytle LLP, and we'll give you the website and all that good stuff as soon as I look it up. Rich Honan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have
you here.
Big
day to be here.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's always a big day, isn't it? It's very exciting. All right, so... Now, hopefully I'm not telling tales out of school here. I don't want to tell tales out of school. But Rich and I were communicating this week, and Rich said, what would you like to talk about? And I said, anything you want. And he wrote back and said, no, you say. And I said, well, what about the trade pact? And Rich wrote back an email that said, ugh. Now... So we have agreed that that's what we're going to talk about. I'm just curious as to what is that reaction, that guttural reaction, which is ugh.
The trade pact encompasses everything that's annoying about living in the world today.
Is that true? Everything?
Yes.
Right down to the little gnats,
right, exactly,
that buzz in your ear?
Yes. There's two big things going on with it. One is the substance of the trade pact itself. Which, from the standpoint of a capitalist, you have to understand that the whole... Sometimes it seems like we call it a free trade pact, but what it really is a capitalism restricting pact. And the other part that's going on is the what we talked about actually last time, which is the process behind all this, which is the fast track. The Trade Promotion Authority that is going on in Congress that would give the authority to the president to kind of fast track the substance of what's going on. So you have politics, you have capitalism, you have socialism, you have globalization, you have everything that makes my day annoying. But
okay.
But it's an important subject, and it kind of brings together. It is. It's important.
Oh, makes my day annoying.
Yes. Yeah, there we go.
So the New York Times has a piece today about what it would mean, and I think the point here is they point out, it's weighty, it's secret, it's 30 chapters, and they're still writing it, even though they've been negotiating it for a decade.
Yeah. And while that's going on, the effort in Washington is to say, whatever we do, let's make sure we pass this as quickly as possible with as few questions as possible. So you have kind of two inconsistent things going on, and it's made for greatly strange bedfellows, you know.
You wouldn't think you'd have Elizabeth Warren and the president sniping at each other.
Exactly. Or and the people on, Elizabeth Warren and a lot of the Republicans, on the same side.
Yeah.
And then Rand Paul kind of wringing his hands, which may be what kind of he always does. But so it's interesting. So just so we understand what we're talking about. So
yes.
First of all, it is a free trade agreement. It's called the Trans-Pacific Agreement, and it is between United States, Canada, and Mexico, Chile, and
11 Pacific Rim nations,
exactly,
plus the United States,
and I guess so. Right, and the big ones being Japan and Vietnam, Australia, New Zealand, not China, but China is looking on closely. And a lot of if you read a lot of the articles, they say, well, this is all part of Obama's Asian pivot. So the whole idea is that these countries will get together and come up with kind of an overarching agreement that will cut through a lot of the kind of disconnects that have grown over the years of, 13 different countries, with 13 different agendas, trying to do trade with each other. So in general, the idea is that it will make it easier for us to communicate with and trade with, these neighbors, and that will unlock lots of economic potential. So that's what that's what they've been working on for the last 10 years.
Now, according to the United States Trade Representative, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, these are a few ways that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will unlock opportunities for you.
Right.
The TPP will support Made in America exports, will enforce fundamental labor rights, will promote strong environmental protection, and will help American small businesses benefit from trade.
Right. And while those are all salutary things, although, you know, need to be a tad better defined. Now, if you read the AFL-CIO website or you listen to Elizabeth Warren, what it will do is will pave the way for corporate interests to be able to run roughshod over the needs of individuals. It will export millions of jobs out of the United States. It will reduce environmental and health compliance, and it will also make it more difficult, basically clamp down on internet freedoms. So those are kind of the two opposing camps.
Do you understand why all the secrecy?
I actually do. In fact, that was a question I think Rosemary asked that today during the roundtable.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, why does it have to be in secret? And I can first, I understand why it's frustrating that a bunch of people have been talking about this for 10 years and the secrecy is to the level that it's at.
Because I believe the official word is that they all need to negotiate with each other in candor and creativity and mutual trust.
Which I agree. I'll tell you, I wish, you know, we all talk a lot about transparency and it's a great thing in the right place. But I think both for trade agreements and just for domestic legislation, I wish there were times when people could kind of speak, you know, where the Vegas rule would apply and you would have the chance to be able to say things that are either stupid or not well thought out or not politically correct or don't play well to your base or just don't make any sense. I think that's really part of having a candid discussion. It has always been in the trade in this realm that the agreements are fairly secret, maybe not quite as secret as this one. You know, we see it in the Iran negotiations as well. And the idea being that, look, let us at least, you know, be able to talk amongst each other and get our deal out before everybody starts kind of pecking away at it. So I understand it. I think that there could be a little more transparency, at least as to kind of the broad strokes. And then what happens is things get leaked and then everybody goes nuts, which is one of the problems between Warren and Obama.
Right. And this is already what's happening with WikiLeaks and so forth.
Right.
Have been leaking some of the information, some of the portions of the document.
So let me ask you, to me, that's an explanation that actually makes sense. I mean, you're having delicate negotiations with countries
Okay. Were you going to ask a question? I apologize.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So does that, do you buy that? I mean, I kind of do buy it.
I buy it. I do think, however, that when we are supposed to debate something and we're supposed to talk about it and, you know, in a democracy, wink, wink, we're going to try to, our representatives are going to vote on this thing. That's huge. And for them to communicate to us and for us to communicate to them as to how we feel about it, I think there has to be better communication, even if it's somewhat vague, as to what this will do instead of the platitudes, but actually give us some hard facts as to what this means.
Agreed.
And I don't feel that we have gotten that yet. And then it's like we're going to race for this and, you know, hurry up and wait. And instead it was like wait and then hurry up.
Right.
We're going to throw it on your desk. We're going to, as you say, vote for it very, very quickly. And I don't think, you know, who's actually going to have the time to read the thing?
Well, yes. And that's, you know, we've talked about that.
Sure.
I just don't know how we got away from this. You know, in the old days, legislators used to actually write the laws. And now there's bill drafting commissions that do that. And
so
it's a bad thing.
To me, it doesn't sound, I mean, as a journalist, I certainly am aware that there are things that you can talk to somebody about and things you cannot talk to somebody about. But I still think there's a way of communicating the general idea of the proposal, of what is at the heart of the negotiation. And if not that, at least let's talk about some other things like China, for example. Right. Why is China not in on the talks?
Right.
What's going on there? I find that to be interesting.
Well, yeah, and I think the agreed, and I think I do think. Let's not, you know, put too broad a brush on this. Now, remember that there's
kind of
internal,
what we do best here.
Yes,
but, that's our
right.
Go
but,
ahead.
But you know, there are, you know, legislators are being briefed, right?
Right.
You know, and legislators do have. They do have access, as President Obama points out when he was squabbling with Elizabeth Warren, said, you know, she can go over and read it. But the circumstances under which they're allowed to read the current text, you know, they could basically walk into a room and in a closely guarded way, they can read it. They can't write it down.
Gloves.
They can't copy it. Yeah, right. They can't, you know, copy it. They can't talk about it. They can't repeat it. But. First, I think there's ways of accommodating both things. I think that the countries should be able to have, you know, fairly candid talks with each other. We should be able to say to Japan, look, we'd love to help you, but we're having a problem with our union people, and unions are very important here in America. And so when we're talking about things like tariffs and your ability to sell cars, you know, you have to understand that I might agree with you intellectually, but I can't sell that at home. And I think that that's an appropriate conversation to have and an appropriate one to be able to have in a confidential way. Having said that, I think that when you marry that up with this trade promotion authority, which is the bill that's going to come up in the Senate maybe today, this is what has been called fast track.
Yeah.
And now that idea, now, the answer to your question is, once you have the proposed free trade agreement and Congress has presumably been briefed, then you have this debate in Congress as to, you know, why is this provision? Why is that provision? Why is this good? Why is that not good? And that hopefully would give you the transparency that you were talking about. Now, I know it's unfortunate that comes at the end of the process, but I think the negotiators would say, you know, we've been doing this with input of Congress and, you know, we have a sense of what the American people want. The fast track authority also makes sense in the abstract, which is, look, we're going to have, you know, this 30 chapter agreement that's been negotiated by 13 different countries. OK, so what we'd like you to do is just tell us yes or no. Don't tell us yes if you change, you know, page 432, you know, because it's been hard enough. It's taken us 10 years to get this far. And now we're going to have 100 senators and 435, you know, Congress people, and they're going to have all their folks in those other, you know, 12 countries. So basically we want an up or down vote. And that's what the fast track authority refers to. And I think it's got to be done in, I think currently, what, 90 days or some fairly quick period of time.
So if you have something like the data flow issue that Australia is upset about, concerned.
This is having the servers not
the
on
servers
there.
That it could conflict with privacy laws and regulations against personal data stored offshore. So that's an example where you'd say, okay, well, I want to look at section 35-72.
Right.
Because this is something that concerns me. But instead, if I'm hearing you right, it's all right. Yes or no?
Yeah
details, schmeetails.
Right.
Tell me.
Right. It, correct. And now I will say that traditionally that's something that presidents have won that ability from Congress to do, because people understand that you can't. I don't want to use the word nitpick, but you can't nitpick. You know, when you know an agreement has been, you know, mature. The negotiations are such at a mature level. But I think what you're really getting at is it might be that Congress doesn't necessarily trust the U.S. negotiators. And I think what you're really hearing, and this is why the Elizabeth Warren, Barack Obama kind of tete-a-tete is so fascinating, is he's basically saying, listen, trust me. And she's saying, I don't trust you. You know, it's not my job to trust you. It's my job to find out by myself. And I think that's one of the problems. This is something where, say, an LBJ or a Bill Clinton type might have fared a little better. Remember, Clinton worked really hard to get NAFTA
really,
across the finish
really
line, right?
Hard.
Yeah. And even he, you know, was celebrated, you know, he loves having these conversations and talking to people at 2 a.m. And I think this is where the Obama style.
So I've heard.
Yeah. The Obama style, doesn't always play well into this. And so I think that's where some of the disconnect is, too, because he's saying, trust me. And they're saying, trust you. We don't even talk to you half the time.
But that was 1993. This is 2015.
Yeah.
And that there is that, as the New York Times calls it, a shadow of NAFTA. There still is that looming ghost-like presence as to what happened there that impacts this as well.
But the problem is we all know what the history is, but nobody really knows. Yes, so the AFL-CIO will tell you lots of American jobs left after, you know, lots of jobs left America after NAFTA. But was that because of NAFTA? Was that because of reduced prices? Was that because of increased labor rates here? Was that because of other globalization where other countries were able to start producing things better? And if so, wasn't that what part of it was supposed to be, was to kind of equalize out the abilities of countries to be both buyers and sellers in the global market? So I'm posing a lot of questions without a lot of answers. I think the fascinating thing now is where you have Republicans who are usually in free trade. You know, we like free trade. We like to, you know, sell and buy things. And the Republicans are saying, we usually like fast track authority, but we're not sure we like it with this president. And two, while we like free trade, we don't like the idea of granting that authority. So we like the substance, but we don't like the process. And that's where you see people like Rand Paul really. He wants free trade, but he's not sure that he really trusts the fast track process.
When you have, and you mentioned the AFL-CIO earlier, mm-hmm. and they keep on coming back and saying, oh, look, we believe we lost 700,000 jobs as a result of NAFTA.
And Harry Reid is banging away at that right now.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, are they right? They certainly lost jobs. Was it because of that? I don't know. Mexico certainly increased its trade, but I'm not saying that Mexico is, you know, living real high on the hog right now. The Republicans would say, or the conservatives would say, well, you know, the more global the world economy, the more you have to adjust the fact that, you know, if you're making $65 an hour in a plant somewhere and you're competing with somebody making $1.50 an hour, you have to adjust as well.
One of the points, and we're already getting letters, but one of the points made, which I...
Gee, I thought we were being as even-handed
and
as possible.
Reading it because I think it's a good point, which is, you know, in agreement...
Did Alan sign his name?
No. Or, okay. In agreement with you that the conversation should be candid, but one of the concerns is, well, okay, but who's actually at the table?
And this is the problem, because who's at the table very often are lobbyists, and these lobbyists are for very large multinational corporations, you know, the drug companies in the world who are trying to be able to protect their patents and reduce, you know, competition from generics and things like that. And that's what I think that, you know, this doesn't happen often, but I agree with Elizabeth Warren on this one, where, you know, why is it that big pharma's lobbyists are allowed in that room and she's not?
Right.
And by extension, the American people are not. So I agree. That's a big problem.
Well, Rich Honan is a partner in Phillips Lytle LLP, where he is partner in charge of the Albany office. And for more information on the firm, you can visit their website, PhillipsLytle.com. That's LYTLE, PhillipsLytle.com. Rich, always great to have you here. We'll have you back next month.
Thanks.
It'd be very nice to talk to you then about something that'll be making people upset.
We'll look forward to it.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.